the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This weekend was the perfect example of why sports are the best reality TV. And we're going to talk through it all on today's edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. If you wanted chaos in college football, you got it. We will talk through the FSU snub in about 15 minutes. But we're going to start, Michael, with the most important thing of the day, obviously, which is how about them Niners? What a performance yesterday, Michael.
Were you a little nervous in the first quarter when you saw the 2-3 and outs? I mean, were you like, oh no, what's going on here?
You know, when you hear that your team has negative 6 yards in a quarter, which were the fewest in a quarter ever under Mike Shanahan, it wasn't, you know, I mean, under Kyle Shanahan, it wasn't the best feeling that I had. But then when you respond with something that hasn't been done since my birth year, which is score on six straight drives after, then, you know, you feel a little bit more confidence build up.
Yeah, no question. And well, you should. I mean, and they did it with really precision. I mean, the second quarter, they had 21 plays, you know, and get 11 first downs. They had horrible field position, really, on those two drives. I mean, they started those drives at their own 15 and their own 10 and went the length of the field to score. And then they come back out again, no field position, 25 and the 23 yard line, and go the length of the field and score. So this wasn't one of those where they benefited from field position, which we often don't discuss. So it was a great play get call game. Their defense was really very aggressive. They tackled well. That was a pristine performance by them other than the first quarter. And look, the Eagles had 24 plays in the first quarter and they could only get 6 points. And you know, that's ultimately what happens when you don't score touchdowns. When you get to the red zone, things fall apart for you.
Yeah, 42-19, the final. So an easy win and cover for San Francisco, which got up to a 3.5 point favorite at close. Total goes over the 47.5. And I was concerned at the start of the game, Michael, because we're used to seeing the 49ers come out and have that great opening game script where they get the ball and they drive down the field. They score that first opportunity they do. So there was a little bit of cause for concern. They worked their way out of it. The other time I had cause for concern was when Dre Greenlaw got into it on the sideline with Big Dom, Michael. What was going on there?
Yeah, I mean, Big Dom's a big part of that organization. I think he's got the assistant GM title along with, you know, head of security. He gets things done no matter who you talk to that has been in Philly, that has left Philadelphia. Whether it's going back, a bunch of these coaches, they all hold Dom in great respect because he gets stuff done. He kind of does all the things that need to get done. He's a vital part of that team. So, yeah, he got into it. It'd be interesting to see. But I'm sure the league will spend more time on this than the horrible refereeing that we saw over the weekend. You know, I'm sure they'll do that. But we'll see. Look, it was one of those situations where Greenlaw gets thrown out. I mean, that was not a fair exchange. I mean, they're throwing Greenlaw out. Dom didn't play. Taking Dom off the sideline, what was that going to do?
Well, and what did that do? He's the head of security, Michael. Like, and I'm a 49ers fan saying this. He was just doing his job from what it looked like to me, trying to bring things up. I wish that Greenlaw didn't make contact. Like, that obviously makes it look a lot worse than it did if he was actually just pointing or anything like that. But makes contact with the face. You got to be out of the game. And I thought that that was a spot where maybe the Eagles could rally a little bit, get behind
they
that.
Yeah, they had nothing left in the tank, Stormy. I think what we were saying all week about the 92 plays against Buffalo, we saw them come out and do their best that they could in the first quarter.
Yep.
They landed a bunch of punches, and it didn't flinch the 49ers. I mean, it didn't flinch them. They said, that's your best punch, and right onto it. And so, look, this was going to be the residual effect of all these three games. Now, let's put things in perspective here, right? You know, people that were complaining about the power rankings of Philadelphia, they're well-earned here. Let's be honest. I mean, Philadelphia has not been a very good team numerically. They've been a powerful team in the last 10 minutes of the game, closing it out and winning. But when you look at the stats, 32nd and third down a defense, 28th in red zone defense, teams are throwing the ball at a rapid rate against them, attacking these corners. I mean, here's the thing that's funny, Stormy. They put money into the secondary. They paid Bradbury. They redid Slay's deal. They trade for Byard. And they can't cover anybody. And in the first quarter, we saw their front kind of give Purdy some trouble, and that helped. But once the offensive line of the 49ers got control of the game, all hell broke loose.
Yeah, and how about Deebo Samuel, too? There was a lot of trash that was talked coming into this game. For him to go out there and have 138 yards and three touchdowns, massive performance from the wide back, whatever you want to call the position that he does, but the strength, the speed, everything he did. And your boy Brock Purdy, 314 yards, four touchdowns. Now the MVP favorite, and I know you guys on Saturday had Brian Baldinger on the program who said, if you want to get a good number on Brock Purdy, get it now. 11-1 was as high as 17-1 some places last week. Now a 3-1 favorite, Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott behind him at plus 350, but well-deserved given all of the numerical stats, speaking of numbers, Michael, that he leads the NFL in right now.
I mean, he's playing flawlessly accurate, you know, bad weather, no problem, makes plays, moves around, gets the ball. I thought Deebo was great yesterday. I know they were talking on the broadcast about, oh, well, you know, McCaffrey's got to be up for it. I know Terry Bradshaw mentioned that that's his MVP. Look, if you're going to give a non-quarterback the MVP, there's only one person who wins that award, just one. His name's Tyreek Hill. He plays for the Miami Dolphins. He tilts the field way more than McCaffrey. He is a huge part of all the success that Miami has had this year and they'll continue to have as they actually are, you know, that now they're tied for the same record as the Chiefs. The Chiefs have the tiebreaker, but the Chiefs seem very vulnerable. This number one seed to me in the AFC is up for grabs. The NFC, it's still Philly, San Francisco, Philly having the one game advantage, but to me, there's only one player outside of the quarterbacking position, whether it's Prescott or Purdy, that really deserves the mention, and that's Tyreek Hill.
Which, quite frankly, I don't know why Tua is 7-1 and Tyreek 16-1, because Tyreek is why Tua looks so good. He had five catches, over 150 yards, two touchdowns yesterday. He's on pace for 2,098 yards, 17 touchdowns, and 132 grabs on the season. That's what his projected numbers are at right now, which obviously would set a single season record set previously by Calvin Johnson. And he said at the beginning of the year, this was what he was going to do. His eye was on the prize from this standpoint. He's been incredible. That's his fifth 150 plus yard game this season, tying an NFL single season record with Tim Brown, Antonio Brown, and Jerry Rice. Pretty dang good company to be a part of, Michael. One thing that you referenced there with Philly being that still top contender in the NFC, Cowboys obviously there as well with their record, an interesting bet, 49ers plus 165 to be the number one seed in the NFC. Philly's still the favorite at their record at minus 135. But given the schedule that they have ahead and the head-to-head game that we have coming up this next week with Philly and Dallas going head-to-head and Dallas being a three-point favorite in that game where things sit right now, I think that could be a good plus-money bet on San Francisco.
Well, look, I think that, you know, they got Seattle at home. They got Arizona in Arizona. Then they got Baltimore at home. Tough game.
Gotta get
Washington
through Baltimore,
and Washington. Yeah. Washington and Washington, and then they got the Rams at home. So let's just say they go 4-1 down the stretch. There's no reason they can't go 5-0. They can't. No reason they can't be 14-3. Mm-hmm. But let's just say they stub their toe against Baltimore at home. I don't think they will, but let's say they do. You know, now the Eagles have to lose two more games, and Philly has a tougher schedule. I mean, let's face it, they got Dallas this week, which that line opened up, what? And it moved. It's at 3.5, what I checked this morning. Mm-hmm. Right. They come back. Then they got Seattle in Seattle. Not a problem. And then two of the last three games, they have the Giants and the Cardinals. But this means they're going to have to play their guys all the way through the end of the year. There's going to be no break. Hurts going to have to play. And I don't think Hurts looked healthy yesterday. I don't think Hurts was this has. I don't think he's had the same speed. Remember, this run game, Stormy, has been the key to their success, right? They've averaged 4.6 yards per attempt last year. They're down to 4-1 this year. That's a half a yard. Now, they carry the ball more last year, 32 attempts. This year, they're down to 30. But what we're seeing from Philly this year, and we've been saying it all year, that second quarter dominance that they had last year, 206 points, they're minus 50 in the second quarter this year.
And you mentioned Jalen Hurts not looking like himself. He also did have to leave the game dealing with what appeared to be potentially a concussion. He cleared protocol. He came back in. But yeah, given that state of the game anyways, late, I was surprised that they kept him in as long as they did. I respect not wanting to throw in the towel to an extent, but you don't want to hurt your most prized possession. But Michael, let's go from one Super Bowl competitor a year ago that doesn't look the same to another in the Kansas City Chiefs, who fell to the Packers last night, 27-19. And the 2-minute officiating was pretty brutal.
Brutal. Yeah. I mean, look, but we're going to make sure we really dig into the Dom and the Greenlaw thing this week, and we're going to make sure we don't talk about the officiating. I mean, I don't know. I was watching a game. They called a false start. I never even saw it in the Rams-Browns game. I mean, it just doesn't extend to the national TV games. It goes all over. Look, Kansas City has no one to blame but themselves, right? I mean, you throw an interception in the fourth quarter. You have to punt. You can't convert plays. You know, that they just didn't – they haven't brought their A game with them. And they only forced – I mean, let's face it now. Green Bay only had 7 possessions in the game, Stormy. In the fourth quarter, they ran almost 30 plays and had 9 first downs in the fourth quarter. If you're a great defense, you're getting that ball back. You can't allow your opponent to have it for 12 minutes in the fourth quarter when you're behind in the game. And that's what Green Bay did.
Yeah, and for this Kansas City team, Michael, like, we've talked about it a lot, and last week, granted, they woke up in the second half, but they have not been a good second half team. They were shut out in 3 straight games at one point in the second half. So it's very interesting to watch where this team is at compared to where we saw them winning a Super Bowl last February. We'll pick back up a little bit more on this game when we come back. We got to take a quick timeout here, our first break of the show. We'll also get into the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's decision to keep out, for the first time in CFP history, an undefeated Power 5 champion. So a lot of layers to that discussion. Excited to have all of you on board with us. A lot to get into. Stay with us right here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
College Bowl season is here, and VSiN's got an early Christmas present for you, a VSiN Pro subscription. You don't have one yet? No problem. We're giving away this year's College Bowl betting guide to everybody. We've got spreads, totals, and expert picks from the Golics, Steve Mackinnon, and Brent Musburger for every single bowl game. Put a bow on this bowl season. Get your free copy of our VSiN College Bowl betting guide. Absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/bowl guide to get your free copy today. Very excited for bowl season. We'll get into college football in a moment, because obviously there's been a lot of drama over the past 24 hours with what happened in the College Football Playoff's final rankings. But let's get back to real quickly that Chiefs-Packers game on Sunday Night Football last night, Michael, because now through the past 3-4 games, we have seen the transformation for Jordan Love at quarterback, that it's not a fluke what he's doing out there anymore. He's starting to get things together, it really seems.
Yeah, I mean, I thought his accuracy, his timing, his rhythm have all improved through the season. You know, we talked about it on the podcast. He's able to cut down on his bad throws. He's still not at 70% bad throws, okay? But, you know, that number has gone up. He was in the mid-50s. Now he's in the mid-60s. So he's cut down on bad throws. He's only at 16.7% of off-target throws, which that number was in the 20s earlier in the season. So you can see he's got more rhythm to the game. You could see he's got more ability to kind of handle the offense. And look, these skill players are doing a great job. I mean, they really are. They're moving they're able to catch, advance the ball, run after the catch. I think their young receivers have grown up. There's no question about it. They've grown up, and this has really helped him. And he's grown up, too. I mean, this Packer team is peaking at the right time. They really are. And with his ability to be accurate, and I think without Aaron Jones, I was surprised by this. I think even A.J. Dillon is playing better. I mean, his numbers were in the 2s on yards per attempt. Now he's gone way up. And for a team that doesn't have any – they don't have their best tight end, right? For a team that doesn't have any really production in terms of success ratio from a catch standpoint, you know, what you want when you have great receivers like Hill and those players, their catch ratio is usually in the high 60s, low 70s. Tight ends are always above 70 when they're good. Packers don't have any of that. And yet now they're starting to, their numbers are starting to climb, and you could see it. I mean, Musgrave, before he got hurt, he's at 73.3. When he comes back, that number will go way up.
Yeah, we will have to see what happens with Christian Watson dealing with a hamstring. But LaFleur said it before the game, Michael, that for his quarterback, Jordan Love, he's had 1,000 snaps and mistakes now to learn from and to start to figure things out. And over these last three games, 3-0, 857 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, no picks. Since week 9, he's third in QBR of all quarterbacks, third in pass yards, and second in touchdowns. So this stretch has been really good for him to get some confidence, and the Packers now sit at 6-6 and are in that 7th spot in the NFC playoff picture. They are now minus 230 to make the playoffs, and I think they're becoming a team that you don't want to see in that early round.
Yeah, I think that's right. And their defense is tough to block, right? I think their defense is tough to block, and they're covering better. Yesterday, they played man-to-man against the Chiefs and had no issues, you know, and they were able to put some pressure on. Look, we know the Chiefs aren't explosive. The Chiefs ran the ball effectively. They were over 5 yards a carry in the game. But again, what happened? They got ahead. The Packers scored to get ahead. The Chiefs kind of couldn't run the football. You know, I do think they're a tough out. If he continues to play at this level, and we said last spring and summer that the Packers were not a bad team. They were good defensively. They just needed somebody to play quarterback that was playing well. A lot of good young players on their offense. And that offensive line can pass protect. And I think that's shown to be true.
And I think we're feeling a little bit vindicated for our preseason thoughts on Jordan Love and the Packers versus that stretch. We were like, oh, maybe this is not going to work out. It turns out our initial feelings were correct, at least for the time being. Okay, Michael, let's get into a little college football playoff talk here, because for the first time in the history of this 4-team format, an undefeated Power 5 team, a conference champion, has been held out. The way that the top four shook out, Michigan number one, Washington two, Texas three, Alabama gets in as a one-loss SEC champion at 4, and then Florida State and Georgia end up on the outside looking in. When you saw this come down, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I said on Saturday night to the great Bill Berman, who basically was cheering on Alabama and was responsible for the turnaround. He takes full credit for it completely, right? I mean, if Big Daddy takes credit for the Packers, Bill Berman's going to take credit for Alabama. I mean, Nick Saban only did his best job because of he had somebody in his ear all
week.
Obviously. I felt like, to me, I would have put Georgia and Alabama in. I know it sounds like I'm an SEC snob. I didn't get all the Texas love. You know, I mean, here's a team that I didn't think the Big 12 was as good as it's been in the past. You know, they struggled to, you know, they beat Kansas State on a missed extra point. Well, you could say Alabama got lucky on the 31-yard touchdown pass. I get you. But Alabama played some more challenging teams than I thought the Big 12 had this season. So I never thought they would put Florida State in, because they keep saying it's the best four teams. So when you say that, how is Georgia not one of the best four teams?
You're not going to get a disagreement out of me, Michael. I came on the show with you and Femi on Saturday and said as much as well. I like this top four. I am fine with it. I'm not going to get on a soapbox saying it is a travesty that Georgia is not in. I do think that they should have been. Had 29 straight wins coming into this. They were the top ranked team in the country. And it's the first time that in the penultimate rankings, the top team in the country at that time fell out. It's also the first time that we saw seeds 7 or below make their way in that final set of rankings leading up to the last one. And so a lot of firsts, a lot of uniqueness to it. If I'm Florida State, I'm pissed, and I think rightfully so. The comments from Mike Norvell afterwards with his disappointment in the decision, I completely understand, and I think are warranted from the standpoint of you want to feel like the games matter. But anyone watching Florida State, Michael, saw with their wide eyes open that they are not one of the top four teams in the country. And I think the one mistake, to your point about Georgia, that the selection committee made in their explanations about the rankings and Jordan Travis, this team not being the same without him, is that they are ranked ahead of Georgia. I think that if you're talking about the best teams in the country, Florida State clearly is not better than Georgia. Hence why when they play in the Orange Bowl, they're a 14.5 point underdog.
Yeah, I mean, think about that. 14.5 points. Well, let me ask you. I said Mitch and Pauly had me on this morning, as they always do on Mondays. I asked both of them, what would the line be, Georgia versus Texas? So Georgia's a 5-point favorite on a neutral to Alabama. What would you make the line for Georgia versus Texas?
What'd you say?
I said 6.5, 7. They both were shocked. And then I said, well, they were 5-point favorites against Alabama. And you can't say that that game was mishandicapped, that Alabama. I mean, look, I thought Jalen Milroe played good. I thought he played a B game. He missed a lot of throws. You watched the tape of the game, the all 22. He had crossers open. He didn't throw them to him. He made it harder on himself than he had to. But at the end of the day, they won the game, and they won by 3, and they did a great job of keeping the ball away from Georgia, because I think if Georgia gets the ball back, they might score there or at least tie the game. They both kind of looked at me at shock. They both shocked by my answer, and they kind of thought about it and said, maybe you're right.
Yeah, it's Michael, I think that the spreads that we're seeing are very telling too, and especially on the Florida State end of this. DraftKings even came out like immediately and tweeted what their projected number on a Michigan-Florida State game would be, and they would have opened it at 13. Like this Georgia-Florida State game opened at 13.5 and has been bet already toward the dogs here. So I think that the committee got it right from that standpoint. I agree with you that I think it probably would have made more sense for it to be Alabama and Georgia, but I don't hate Texas. I love these games that we're going to get. Michigan, a 1.5-point favorite against Alabama. We're getting Jim Harbaugh against Nick Saban. That's going to be awesome. The Sugar Bowl, right. Number 2, Washington, and number 3, Texas. Like, absolutely sign me up for that. I think that's going to be a great game. The spread in that one, Texas favored by 4.5, total 64. I know a lot of people are saying, well, in the past we've had blowouts. Why does it matter? Florida State earned it. They deserve it. Again, this is not about the most deserving team. And I say credit the College Football Playoff Selection Committee for saying, okay, we've had blowouts in the past. Let's try to do our best to not have that be the case. Let's actually get the best teams out there and have that competitive game that we've been looking for. Like, I'm not knocking the committee for anything here. I think that they did as good a job as they could with the chaos that ensued.
Right. I agree. And I don't think they did. What I don't think they do a good job of is managing expectations, right? I mean, they should have come out and they should have had Florida State rank lower than they did because they didn't have a quarterback.
I agree.
I mean, that's what they didn't do. They didn't manage any expectations. And so when you have Florida at 4, they had them 4 going in, right?
Yep.
And Florida wins. And now you drop them to 5 because even after they won, then you're saying, well, we graded your performance. If they would have Florida at 6 saying, look, they're not the same team. They're struggling to win. You know, if they have an impressive performance against Louisville, we'll put them in here. But I think that's where they did a horrible job managing expectations.
I agree. I do think that was a mistake because they do have in their criteria that injuries can play a factor, that they should have made that more known in the previous set of rankings. But there's something else that I want to explain about this, and we can get into it later in the hour because I was at the mock selection committee earlier this season and have some more intel. We'll discuss, but first, TG, when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for just $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Excited to take things behind the counter as we welcome in great friend of the show, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook out there at the Borgata in Atlantic City, joining us like he does every Monday here on the Lombardi Line. And I gotta say, with all the favorites coming through yet again, TG, you guys were probably pretty excited to see the Packers get that win on Sunday Night Football, yeah?
Well, surprisingly enough, we needed the Chiefs to cover in that
really?
Game.
Really?
So, yeah. Yeah, it was one of those games where, you know, we had a lot of big decisions yesterday. Some went our way, some did not. And we actually came out really well. I know talking to some other places, didn't go as well for the sports books this weekend, but yesterday was actually a pretty good day here, I have to say. And while the Chiefs-Packers game didn't go our way, the big game of the day was the Niners and Eagles, and that was the big game of the day for us. And that certainly went our way. That was a big win for us with the Niners covering the three there. And, you know, we took a lot of Eagles money yesterday. Mostly Eagles money there. So it was that game was certainly a big win. Biggest bet of the day actually was on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for $336,000, I believe it was. Laying the three with Tampa, ended up getting a push on that one. So no real money exchanging hands there with that one, as that ended 21-18. And probably got a little bit fortunate there with the Panthers able to get the late touchdown and get the two-point conversion there. Panthers did have a shot late, I guess, but couldn't convert there on fourth down, and then Tampa was just able to run out the clock there and get the three-point win. But that game actually closed 3.5, went to 3.5 after that big bet that came in.
Yeah, what did you – I mean, that game was 5.5 for most of the week, and there was a storm all over, not just in your book, but everywhere on yeah. Carolina. They were the heavy, heavy favorite. Two games I want to ask you about. Where'd you close Washington? Washington was such a public dog all week that, mm-hmm. you know, the line was moving. And then where did you have to close the Philly game? I'm sure probably based on everybody betting the Eagles, you were getting some – you had to move the number.
So the Dolphins – open 9, they actually closed 9. Now, it was 9.5 quite a bit throughout the week. But as you said, Commanders seem to be a public dog. I don't know if it was weather related or just people thinking that the number was too high. But obviously the Dolphins had no problem covering the 9 or 9.5, no matter what you laid with them. And the Eagles, we did close 3. Michael, it's, had some discussion about going back to 2.5 there. There's several bigger bets there on the Eagles, but again, they're from house players, so not really respected money that we typically would move off of.
What do you think looking ahead to Eagles Cowboys coming up this next week? I'm seeing 3 largely with the Cowboys favored at home. How much can you take away from what we saw in this Eagles game against the 49ers? I know it was a tough spot coming off that Bills game and the 3 games in 13 days.
Yeah, it was definitely, and we talked about that last week. It was a very difficult scheduling spot there for Philly. San Fran certainly had the rest advantage coming in. Philly's previous 2 games prior to the Niners there yesterday were very tough games, and the defense had been on the field quite a bit. So, this is another spot here where you have the Eagles now on the road, division rival. And yesterday, while it probably went a long way towards deciding the number 1 seed, this game here, the Eagles and Cowboys coming up on Sunday night, also going to have major implications there for the top seed in the NFC, because Eagles right now are clinging to that 1-game lead over the Niners. Now, this is probably, when you look at the Eagles' schedule, this is the last of what you would call difficult games for them. The Niners still have, I believe, the Ravens to contend with it at some point. But Dallas, they have a very difficult stretch to close out this season. So, the Eagles, even if they lose this game in Dallas, I think they would probably still have the advantage there to win the NFC East. But again, this is kind of the end of that juggernaut of the schedule that the Eagles had to get through. So they are 3.5 point dogs right now on the road. And for the first time all season, I actually do have the Cowboys power rated above the Eagles in my power rating. So we'll see how this gets bet here. With that hook, I'm sure we'll probably get some Eagles money at the 3.5. But again, the game against the Niners yesterday, I was a little surprised at how the Niners started out slow. The Eagles stalling out there on those first 2 drives and only getting field goals, I thought was really telling, and ended up obviously costing them dearly, because if they could have gotten touchdowns on both of those drives there and went up big, might have been a different outcome. But them to stall out there and the Niners to hold steady in the red zone, that I think was really key, because the Niners weren't doing much at all offensively in the first quarter.
Yeah, it seemed like, you know, the Eagles had their moment in that first quarter where you're like, okay, they're firing their best shot here, but then they faded rather quickly. So you say you move the power. So right now, what's the difference between San Francisco and Dallas in your power ranking?
Between San Francisco and Dallas? I'd say on a neutral, it's about 5-point difference. San Fran is at their high of the season at this point.
Right. And who's the closest team to San Fran? Is it still Philly?
No. I would say it's Dallas and Miami right now.
Okay.
It's going to be fun race down the stretch here as we're finally figuring out who teams really are in the National Football League. And it seems that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee has figured out which teams they want in the top four. We've got Michigan, obviously, in that top spot, TG, followed by Washington, Texas, and Alabama, Florida State on the outside looking in. But you have to make numbers for all of these games. Were you surprised right off the top at the number that you guys put together for Georgia and Florida State? But it seems deserving. It seems like they made the right decision in keeping Florida State out, in my brain, based on those numbers.
Yeah. I mean, we don't really get into the whole committee thing and who, at least here, who's deserving and who isn't. I mean, if you're strictly talking power ratings, obviously Florida State would not have a prayer.
Where are they in your power ratings?
There are quite a few teams above them, we'll just say. So even though they are undefeated, I mean, you know, taking the quarterback situation into account, I mean, they're well down there. So, you know, if you're looking at strictly power ratings, you know, they're probably right around 10, 11 in the country. But, you know, if you're looking at just power ratings, who are the four highest power rated? If you want to put those into the playoffs, that'll be Michigan, Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio State. That's who I would have as the four.
Yeah. Ohio State, you have them in there, huh?
Yeah. I have them pretty much right in line with Oregon. So I wouldn't even have Texas. I actually make them a point dog to both those programs.
There you go.
Also, for anyone who missed it, with Ohio State playing in the Cotton Bowl, not being in those top four, Kyle McCord has entered the transfer portal. Some news there. How hard is that as a bookmaker to keep track of all of these transfer portal guys, who's in, who's out ahead of the bowl games?
Well, right. So that's a great point by you, Stormy, because this is what we have seen as we go into bowl season, and this is going to be a talking point. But key to remember, there are going to be guys that are either entering the transfer portal, opting out of bowls if they obviously have aspirations to enter the NFL draft and believe that they're going to get drafted. So you'll see guys sit out these bowl games. And all these things will affect the number greatly. So you'll even have coaching changes that come up that will affect things. So certainly good point there by you. And if you're betting the bowls, you know, it's probably better to err on the side of caution early, because you don't know what kind of player movement's going to happen there as we head into the next few weeks.
Great insight as always, TG. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, TG.
All right. Thank you.
And I mean, that's another great thing to look at with Ohio State specifically as they take on Missouri. I don't expect Marvin Harrison Jr. to play given his draft stock, right?
No, so no chance.
Currently, no, Ohio those, State. Go ahead.
All those games that just give you a watch and a bag, these guys are going to the top 10, ain't playing it.
Yep. Ohio State currently 2.5-point favorite against Missouri. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget on on DraftKings Sportsbook this week. New customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. That's V-E-G-A-S. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And a couple more thoughts here real quickly, Michael, just on the way that things played out with the selection committee yesterday. I think it was a really interesting point from TG talking about his power ratings and where the books view Florida State as, you know, 10, 11, 12 on his list as it pertains to their strength at this point in the season without Jordan Travis. But what we talked about earlier was the mistake of having Florida State in that four spot in the penultimate rankings. And I sat in earlier this year at the CFP mock selection committee where they have like a bunch of TV people try to bring us all in and help us better understand their process behind the scenes. And I think something a lot of people don't really realize about the selection committee's process is the way that they tier out voting throughout the course of things. So like they'll go and vote on, let's say, the top three first. And okay, these are our top three for now. Let's vote on 4, 5, 6. They'll vote on 4, 5, 6. If there's dissension, there's disagreement, they'll say, okay, let's do 1 through 5, 1 through 6 and re-vote until they get to a point where they feel like at least the bulk of the room is on the same page. And they don't look at the last week's rankings as much as they probably should. And I think fans and those of us on the outside looking in that see Florida State was at 4 last week, how can you change your view of them like that when you already had them at 4, when you already gave them that hope? I think it's because they really do look at it with a different lens every week, and they're not beholden to the rankings the week before the way we are looking at it. Which, is that right? No, but that's the way that it is in the room from my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, but you have to kind of take... Look, I agree every week's a new week, right? I agree with that. But I think you have to take some of last week and bring it in. Like, what did Florida State show against a bad Florida team that I don't believe qualified for the – didn't win 6 games, correct, Stormy?
Yeah.
That, what did they show that keep them as the fourth team? I mean, what did they show? You know, I didn't understand that. That weren't they – you know, so, like, for me, you just basically set yourself up for criticism. Yeah. If you would have put them 6 where they are and where they belonged and made Ohio State 5, were they worried about putting Ohio State too close to be tempted to put them in there? I think a lot of this is politics, right? I think a lot of it, the way they seed it, they can say they go week to week, but clearly they wanted Ohio State out of the conversation, so they moved them down. Ohio State's a better team than Florida State right now, as much as I don't want Ohio State in it. But last week, after Ohio State lost to Michigan, they were a better team.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't tell me that Ohio State's not better than Florida State after they beat Florida. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No, and I know a lot of the people on social media that are defending Florida State. And again, like, I know it is hard to look at and to see them be an undefeated team of a Power 5 conference and not get in. Like, I get that it is tough. But I'm looking more at the 2-game sample size of who they are without Jordan Travis than I am at the full season. And even at the full season, if you want to take all of that into account, the ACC was not a juggernaut conference this year. It's not like, you know, it's not like their win over Clemson was a win over Clemson in years past. It's even LSU, who they hung their hat on week one, which credit to them for scheduling the way that they do. But LSU was a 3-loss team. It's not the same. And so I feel for Florida State. It sucks. We'll have Mike Norvell in your office a little bit later. See what you can do to help motivate him and Florida State as they get set for their bowl game against Georgia. But I think that the spread that we have against Georgia being at 14.5, Michigan's reaction to getting Alabama versus Florida State was also very telling in itself. I like the top 4. I'm excited for those 4 games. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I just wanted to make sure that some people at home at least had a little bit of a better view into the process that the selection committee has. It's imperfect. They're humans. But if this is something that you wanted so much because you hated the computers and you hated just going off wins and losses and numbers, you brought in the human element. It can be the best thing and it can be the worst thing. And I think it's just the lack of consistency that has some people frustrated. But let's go back to the NFL, Michael, because I know you were a little bit frustrated this week. And, you know, we own our wins and we own our losses on this program.
Yeah, sure.
You have been crushing it the past few weeks, and it was a down week this week. But we're getting back on track next week against Russo. I can feel it.
I hope so. You know, it's just you have to kind of, You know, one of the things I've learned in this betting world is you, everybody highlights their wins and nobody talks about their losses. You know, they kind of just go away. And for me, I think the only way you're going to learn is to highlight your losses. And so I really liked Cleveland. And people looked at me like I was crazy. I got a text Sunday morning from the great Bill Simmons and said, why would you ever bet with Joe Flacco? And I wrote him back and I said, look, I'm not betting Joe Flacco here. I'm betting the Browns defense. Mm-hmm. I'm betting that Flacco will just stay out of the way. And I'm betting that with 4 points, that even if the Rams win, it'll be a field goal game. And that Flacco, their defense will carry them. Well, that was the wrong assumption because, you know, when you looked at the Browns going through their season, they had not played well on the road defensively. You know, Indy moved the ball up and down the field, scored in the high 30s, right? Baltimore moved the ball. You know, they had a chance to win that game. Baltimore did. And, you know, you look at these and they weren't great. But I thought, okay, they're going to Los Angeles. That's not a home field, right? Mm-hmm. There'll be as many Brown backers there as there will be Rams fans. So the defense will be alive. Myles Garrett will play. They'll pressure Stafford. And in the second half, if you just study any of Stafford's second half numbers, he's not very good. And yesterday he was. So that was a mistake in terms of what I assumed to be true, not the Flacco point. Like, and then I hear today everybody's talking about, well, you got to bet against Joe Flacco. No, Joe Flacco wasn't the reason they lost.
Yeah.
The reason they lost was because their defense was really bad on the road. And that, to me, is the essence of handicapping, is to figure out why a team won, why a team lost. The Titans gave up 2 block punts in that game. I also was on the Titans in that game. Now, they fired the special teams coach today. Okay, not because he gave up 2 block punts against me, but because his special teams was horrible.
You're like, I wish they would have fired him a week prior so that I didn't have to deal with this.
Yeah, I didn't disagree. You know, I got to listen to Russo on Friday telling me how great he is. So I think to me that's, you got to figure out why your bets were wrong. Like my Steeler pick was a horrible pick. Like for me to think that 6 points, that I just thought they would win by 7. I thought they would dominate the game and win by 7 because I thought they would play better after their offensive performance against Cincinnati, and it didn't manifest itself, and then Pickett got hurt.
Well, and they're playing the Arizona Cardinals, which you should think they should be. That most teams have been able to handle business, again, Kyler Murray or not. But as for the Browns, Michael, just to go back to that game real quickly. Yeah, Joe Flacco wasn't the problem. They were in it and I thought had a real chance to win in the third quarter still. Off the couch, 2 touchdowns, 254 yards, did throw the interception. But like he was fine. He did he led that offense to more point production than any game Dorian Thompson-Robinson was in. So I can't Flacco for anything from that standpoint. And credit Matt Stafford, Michael. I don't know about you, but since he had the injury and he's come back from it, 7 touchdowns and 1 interception the last 2 games. And I know it was against Arizona last week, but against this Browns defense that we have high expectations for, I was really impressed with Matt Stafford.
He really was. And what one thing I thought Schwartz did, and I thought Schwartz's defensive game plan would have been better. He usually handles the Kyle Shanahan outside zone really well. They did not set the edge very well on either end. But what Stafford was able to do, he had no pressure on him at all. He had no pressure on him. He delivered the ball with accuracy, and he made every single throw. Every single throw that he needed to make in the game, and they ran against a very good Brown defense. They gained 120 yards on the ground. Again, I didn't think they would be able to do it. When they beat Seattle at home, they won by a point. They gained 82 on the ground. When they lost to Green Bay in Green Bay, they gained 68. When they lost to Dallas, they gave 92. I thought that was going to be the kind of game. I thought it was going to be that kind of game, but Stafford found a way. And also, in the handicap, I was feeling like, okay, Schwartz coached Stafford. He drafted him. If anybody knows how to play this guy or what causes him problems, Jim Schwartz. But it never really showed up on the tape at all.
The Rams now, one of those 4-6-6 teams that are trying to work their way into a wild card spot in the NFC. Do you think that they can get there?
I was really impressed with how they blocked the Browns. I really was. I did not think that they could block the Browns as well as I thought for sure he would get hit more times than not. And And Jim had to bring pressure. He had to empty his holster. He was not able to really get anything generated from his defensive line. You know, Myles Garrett was playing with one arm. You could see it. But no one else was creating any havoc inside at all. So, you know, if they can protect like that, Stormy, they're a dangerous team. I mean, they have improved. They're probably better than Minnesota. They end the season in Minnesota. But right now, they're playing better than Minnesota. They're playing better than Atlanta, too. Although that may not matter because Atlanta's going to get in the South. So it has no bearing.
And Seattle, though, in an interesting spot there at 6-6 as well. Rams have looked better than. We'll be right back. Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming up next.